The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show, hour number two. And many of you know we begin each hour with our impact segment, which is 20 plus minutes of uninterrupted dialogue and discussion. For this impact segment, I have two guests, and they are regular. They return quite a bit. They are both from Berglund and Johnson Law Group. It is always a blessing to welcome back on the program Stephen Johnson and Tony Vieira from Berglund and Johnson. Stephen and Tony, thanks for coming back on. I hope you're both well.
Hey, Frank. It's good to be here. Thanks for having us.
Hi, Frank. We're doing fine, and we hope you're doing well as well.
It's good to hear both of your voices. And I want to present at least this portion of the interview with the context of, this is a difficult decision to have and debate and discussion, if you will, but it's essential. And what I mean by that is, with everything that's occurred over the last couple of months, elder abuse is a reality and a painful one at that. Would either one of you or both of you talk about elder abuse in general, and then I want to kind of get into possible litigation with nursing homes and some things that have been going on, and maybe some of the listeners right now would benefit from reaching out to you. So either one of you or both of you, talk about Berglund and Johnson as it applies to elder abuse.
Sure. So we've been litigating elder abuse cases for probably 10 or 20 years. And a lot of that arises from neglect on the nursing facilities, the skilled nursing facilities, and the residential care facilities. A lot of these facilities are and have been understaffed, have not been provided with the proper equipment, and that leads to patients being neglected, not receiving the proper care. And as a result of that, they receive bed sores, they receive, they don't get the proper medication, or they're overly medicated. They get dehydrated because they're not provided with enough water and other types of medicine and food, things like that. So we've seen this arise a lot in the last 10, 20 years. And it's no coincidence that we're dealing with a lot of nursing home deaths with the COVID patients and things like that. So, we can talk a little bit more in depth on that if you want, but I think Tony has some things he'd like to share as well.
So, Frank, the thing I'd add to that, just kind of bringing us up to the issue that's really on us right now, and that's this COVID-19 thing. I think this needs to be said. So let's take what Stephen just said, that is, historically, and this isn't every facility, but it's widespread. Historically, facilities of this sort, and we can all talk about why it's that way, but it is the case that they've suffered from problems that relate to patient care that specifically flow from understaffing and undertraining and all those sorts of things that require money. So whether it's just, the old profit motive at work, or whether there are other structural problems, this has been a fact and an ongoing problem within these sorts of facilities for decades now. And so we arrive at this point with this COVID issue, which, granted, is an extraordinary situation. It's one that is one of those, let's call it a 1-in-100-year issues. But the fact of the matter is that facilities needed to be, especially facilities that promise to provide enhanced care. They're not just watching mom and dad. They're supposed to be watching them with an eagle eye. Those facilities that are supposed to be doing that need to be doing that. So if we have a case where, or a situation where we have a facility, and for lack of a better metaphor, that's caught with its pants down because it wasn't staffing and it wasn't training and it wasn't putting the necessary investment in where it needed to be. And now the fruit of that lack of preparation is apparent, and the fruit is deaths, then we have a real issue, and we have a real issue society-wide. And we know that this is a problem because we can see from all the news reports that no one is disputing that we see, by and large, all over the place, the majority of these deaths, and in some places the vast majority of these deaths, in these sorts of facilities. So it is a real issue that's going to need to be dealt with.
For those listening right now, I mean, the reality has been, and I don't even know if it is statewide yet, but the reality has been most of us, by which we've had loved ones being in a nursing facility, we've not even been able to get to them. And so as that begins to open up, I don't know the state if it is completely open up. I think of the families listening right now where maybe when they went in, they were shocked, horrified, upset, and they're thinking, I don't know what to do. I mean, this is a really devastating reality here. Can both of you speak to a couple of decades and the experiences that you've had at Berglund and Johnson to help families navigate through something as incomprehensible as either death or neglect of a loved one in a nursing home?
Well, they can certainly call us. You know, we've been getting COVID calls for the last couple of months now. And obviously we don't know how this is going to pan out, legally. You know, it's all up for interpretation right now. It's still ongoing. The virus isn't going to go away anytime soon. But the thing is to give us a call, and we would evaluate that nursing home. We have a good idea of what nursing homes, do a good job in terms of caring for their patients. We also have a good idea of the nursing homes that do not do a good job. And as Tony mentioned, this is just a historical practice by some of these nursing facilities. Most of these nursing facilities are for profit, so they're always going to try and, you know, profit as much as they can. And so, you know, with the epidemic or the pandemic that we have right now, families are unable to, you know, go into the facilities and see how their loved one is doing. Certain measures have been put into place by some nursing homes where, you know, you can speak with your mom or your dad on the phone or FaceTime with them, or you can be outside their window. That's happened to some of our clients. And I think my father mentioned that at the last interview where we have a client who's suffered a traumatic brain injury, and the facility actually allowed his mother to come to the window. They wheeled her son out to the window, and, you know, so they can talk, or at least she can talk to him because he can't really talk anymore. So, number one, you call the facility and see what you can do to try and, you know, get in touch with your father, your mother, or your loved one. Can you come in? And if so, probably have to wear a mask and go through certain measures. But I think every facility is kind of different right now. They're all kind of dealing with it on their own, and that's kind of scary.
Stephen Johnson and Tony Vieira are here from Berglund and Johnson. BerglundandJohnson.com is the website. Stephen made mention of the phone number. It's 1-800, the number 4, and if hurt, IFHURT, 1-800-4-IF-HURT. I think a follow-up question for some listening right now that aren't even sure about the situation or maybe the aftermath, maybe they have gotten their mom, dad, grandmother, grandfather out, and they've got questions. Would you also urge the listeners to just call you with general questions about how they can go from here?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we don't just, you know, accept calls to take a case. We accept calls to speak with people who need help, who aren't really sure where to go. And if we don't have the answers for them, we will find out the answers for them and get back to them right away. So, you know, you can kind of think of us as a helpline as well. We'll be able to kind of hear you out, pray with you, and get an understanding of where you're coming from and see what we can try to do to help.
Yeah, the question in my mind was, I suspect there are people listening right now and they think, oh, I don't know, or maybe I'll just kind of let that go. And obviously confusion is something that we're all dealing with in different ways. And when we talk about nursing homes and the realities of a loved one struggling, or maybe we've lost a loved one, I think there are some of us that just go, well, I'll just kind of move forward, and we don't want to cause trouble. And yet you've been there for a couple of decades dealing with elder abuse in all sorts of shapes and sizes. And I'm grateful that you said to the listeners, look, just call. If you've got questions, just call. Obviously, if Stephen or Tony or Dan or anybody else can't help, you'll get the listener the help that they need. And again, this is a conversation that's really difficult to have, but my goodness, you've been in this area of dealing and helping families for a couple of decades. And if we can't just reach out for help, what are we talking about here?
Yeah. So I agree with you, Frank, right on. We, we're here. And so, as Stephen said, it's not simply a calculus of whether or not there's a case to take. It may be that that folks just have questions, and so we're more than happy. In fact, we are happy to take those calls and to talk to those people, even if they think that they probably don't have a case, to the extent that they have questions that relate to any of these issues, just give us a call.
And
easy as that.
And Frank, oftentimes when we speak to clients or even callers, they're happy at the end of the conversation. They feel a lot better about what they're going through, what their options are, and the fact that they just spoke to someone about it.
Yeah.
So I think that offers some benefits as well.
Now, I want to ask the question. There may not be any merit in going further, but I know both of you, and I know Dan, and I'm thinking, okay, this is kind of unprecedented with what we're dealing with, and I'm always interested in you and how this has challenged you. Like when we first started hearing about this a few months ago to now, some area of expertise in past that maybe you can rely on and go back and go, okay, we're glad we've learned that one. So in other words, if there's any merit in going down this road a little bit, how has this pandemic challenged both of you at Berglund and Johnson in helping us take care of our loved ones?
Well, it's challenged us quite a bit because the courts are closed and are still closed and will probably be closed for another few months. And so what that means is we can't pursue justice for our clients until the courts open up. Now, that doesn't mean we can't work their cases behind the scenes, but until these courts open up, we're not going to be able to go to trial. We're not going to be able to, go to motion hearings or argue in front of the judge on certain issues that are important to our clients and are important to our client's case. Each case is like a game of chess. Every move matters, and as long as the courts are closed, it kind of handcuffs us a little bit. But you know what? We have faith that it's the courts is going to open up pretty soon, hopefully. But in the meantime, we're going to try and resolve some of these cases through mediation and arbitration and things of that nature, and just keep plugging along.
The only thing I'd add to that, Frank, is this. I think it challenges at least me personally, and I'm sure Stephen would agree with this in a couple different ways. And that is, number one, we're subject to the same reports that everybody else is,
yep.
Right? So we see what's the CDC saying today, what's Governor Newsom saying today, what's President Trump saying today, what are the various players saying today, and so to the extent that that information is all over the place. We're trying to figure out what's real and what's not. The kind of as a means of comparison, if we go to trial we have a pretty good idea how the facts are gonna fall, and that's because we've done all the work ahead of time. We know what the experts say. Presumably, everything is settled. It's just a question of how well are you going to present that to your jury, and so on and so forth. But we don't have the tools of cross examination and doing depositions, so it's a little frustrating to us. But what I'd also say is this, and to me, this is the bright spot in all of it. At the end of the day, to the extent that any of these cases go to trial, the question ultimately is whether or not, let's say, a facility did things that were negligent. Were they within or without, or were they outside of their legal obligations? And just like every other trial that's been done, the trials that will be done that deal with this issue will be done based on evidence that we have in hand, not speculations that are out there on the TV and in the newspaper. So there will come a point of comfort where we actually have a real grasp on what ought to have happened in each individual case here. We're going to get there. It's just going to take us a little bit of time. So we're frustrated until that comes around. That's a challenge.
Tony Vieira and Steve Johnson are here from Berglund and Johnson. Last follow-up question, all of this with elder abuse, and I just want to emphasize to the listener, maybe it's more of a statement than a question. You have years of expertise in the area of elder abuse. It's not a matter of right now. Okay, for those of you that maybe you just saw your dad, mom for the first time and you're kind of, well, they're not in good shape. And what do you do? You have years and years of experience before this even came into play. And I just would like you to share with the listeners and reemphasize, absolutely, reach out, call, email. You are there for us, as you often say. You're the legal attorneys that really do care. It's an expression, but it's the truth.
Right. So, you know, I guess I'll kind of just re-mention what I had said previously is, you know, we've done these cases for so long, and it's no surprise to us that there's so many reports out there about all these nursing homes being understaffed. And as a result, you know, all these deaths are starting to occur, and the lack of training, you know, the lack of training is key. They need to have training. And with this COVID issue now, the CDC is implementing some guidelines about the disease and how to prevent against the disease, the PPE that you need to have, the measures that you need to put in place to protect not only the residents and the patients there, but also the workers. The workers and the caregivers, they're also put at risk.
Yep.
You know, we just received a call not too long ago about a caregiver who's 40 years old, and she passed not too long ago. And she's not in the elderly population. She's 40 years old. And that's not old in my book. And this pandemic, this virus is affecting everyone in these nursing homes, not just the elderly patients.
1-800, the number 4-IF-HURT is the number to call. If you want to reach out to Berglund and Johnson, their website again, berglundandjohnson.com. Now, maybe next time we have you guys on, hopefully we can have you in studio and maybe take some calls from the listeners. But I want to do kind of a 180 in the few moments we have in a little bit of a different direction and just kind of at least lay a bit of the foundation for this conversation. And it's in the area of litigation as it applies to another country. And obviously, we hear in the news China and possible lawsuits. Do either one of you want to kind of wade into those waters for a few moments, and then maybe when we have you back, we can have you in studio, talk about that, other areas of expertise, and also take some calls. But what about possible lawsuits to China?
So let me just address that in a general sense, Frank. So right now, there is at least one state, the state of Missouri, that's filed a suit against China. There is legislation pending on a federal level to allow that sort of legislation. Now, you might think it odd that Missouri's filed a suit, and yet there's still federal legislation that hasn't been passed allowing such suits, but That's kind of the way it happens in the legal system. You got various players in various jurisdictions, all of them trying to figure out what they can do, really to lay the responsibility for this where it ought properly be laid. So I'm interested in what the federal legislation is going to look like ultimately and whether there's going to be some. I know there's a federal legislator from New Jersey who's actually advocating some of this legislation. My guess is that it's going to be a model on some of the legislation that exists out there that allows Americans to sue foreigners for acts of terrorism. I assume that will be kind of the way that this whole thing goes. In terms of the specifics of that, what I do is I look forward to maybe talk about this a little bit more next time. But it is a very good topic, one I've been interested in, one I talked to Stephen here just a little bit about. So next time we come back, it would be nice to talk about that. So we'll be happy to do that if that's something you want us to do.
Yeah, I would for sure. And obviously it will be still in the news, needless to say. So as we close, I want to share with the listeners again, if you have any concerns, any questions, whether it's about elder abuse or anything else, I can't emphasize enough to reach out to Berglund and Johnson. They've been a longtime supporter of this radio station for years. Their areas of expertise are wide and varied. Berglundandjohnson.com is the site, website, 1-800-4-IF-HURT. Call them. If they can't help you, they'll obviously point you in the right direction. And in the few moments we have, I'll just throw it to both you, Stephen and Tony. Anything you want to share in closing?
Well, I'm not sure if you're aware, Dave Berglund, he's the man who started this law firm back in 1982 with my father. He passed away a few weeks ago. So it was kind of a big loss here for the firm. And he hadn't been practicing for quite a few years, but, I just thought I'd mention and speak about real quick about how important of a man he was. Mm-hmm. He was a very strong man of faith, man of God, and he built a firm surrounding his principles and the principles of the Bible and the gospel, and that firm is still alive here today, and I have him to thank for that. So I guess it's just one to let the listeners know that a very important and godly man has passed, and he lived a fulfilling life, and we appreciate all that he has done for us, for his clients, and the families that he's touched and brought to the Lord.
Mm. Appreciate that. I did not know that, and I know many people that have been longtime listeners know Dave, and I remember meeting him about 2 years ago, and he made quite an impact on me. So we will definitely grieve his loss and keep his family in our prayers. Tony, anything you want to share in closing?
No, I think that's the best way to close it, Frank, with just a little mention of Dave. You know, my recollection of Dave, I've known Dave for quite a few years. He was one of those guys that going back decades and decades had spent just every day in the trial courts. Mm-hmm. And this wasn't about, for him, it wasn't about making money. He was constantly about the Lord's business.
Yep.
So this was an awesome man. And when I think about how I ought be and how I hope that I am, I see Dave Berglund.
Mm. Mm. Stephen Johnson and Tony Vera are from Berglund and Johnson. They are here to say if they can help you in any way, our KKLA family, reach out to them either through the website berglundandjohnson.com or the number 1-800-4-IF-HURT, 1-800, the number 4-IF-HURT. Tony and Stephen, I appreciate you both greatly, and in the not-too-distant future, I look forward to having you back in studio, and I believe that will be the case. And until that day, God bless you both. Thank you so much for what you do for us and our community. We really, really, truly appreciate you both.
Thanks, Frank. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Frank.
All right. God bless you. We will continue with more of this, the Frank Sontag Show, next. Welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show. Before we move further, I want to send out a big congratulations to Pastor Greg Laurie and everybody at Harvest Christian Fellowship for their big drive-in church that happened Sunday morning at the outlets at Orange. We did broadcast live, KKLA and The Fish. 1,400 cars jammed the mall parking lots, 9 a.m., 11 a.m., and we're going to have Pastor Greg on this Thursday at 3 to talk about, well, that. And my understanding is they're going to do it again this weekend at Harvest Riverside. More information and details about that. But a big thank you to Pastor Greg and everybody at Harvest for, well, my terminology, thinking outside the box. Speaking of thinking outside the box, there's a few stories I want to share with you right here. Yesterday, Gavin Newsom announced new guidelines as to how churches can move forward. We'll get into that a little bit. On the other side of this story, that someone sent me this video, and I want to share it with you. It is very interesting. Now, if you live in Riverside County, you sure know who your sheriff is. His name is Chad Bianco. I have followed him for a while. I like him a lot. I wish he was our sheriff. Not the case. But recently in Riverside County, they've begun opening businesses and restaurants. And a local Fox 11 LA special report featured Sheriff Chad Bianco, Dr. Drew Pinsky, many of you know Dr. Drew, and Alex Michelson. And they talked about the latest in Riverside County. We begin again, Sheriff Chad Bianco is the prominent voice that you'll hear in these excerpts. And if you've not heard this, and even if you don't live in Riverside County, this has to do with all of us because this is about our governor here in our state of California.
So what is your bottom line point and what is your main message to the governor tonight?
You know, exactly what you just said. I can't morally make a criminal out of someone that is trying to feed their family a legal way, and this goes, let's take out of account the order. I don't believe the order is necessarily legal anyway, and when we really get down to it, we've made this 100% political now. I just listened to the doctor say the one death in 14 days. I hope we all realize that is statistically impossible. Sure. That's never going to happen.
Sure.
So he's basically
I want to jump in here and say that that's the thing that jumped out at me. And your board of supervisors asked for a consideration. They would send a letter to the governor saying, please, this is not possible the way our county is constructed. It's so unrealistic and so ridiculous. Why are they clinging to that?
To me, it's 100% obvious. There's no intention of letting businesses go back to work. This is complete, you know, his control, government control over our economy, over our businesses, over our livelihood. And, you know, quite honestly, it's just wrong. And there are the majority of people believe, just like I do, that it is wrong.
What would be the governor's incentive to do that, though? Doesn't he benefit politically if the state is back open and business is going well? I mean, business is shut down. How does that help him?
You know, I don't know. We're going outside of my business
Sure.
opinion and going to my
Sure.
personal opinion. The personal opinion, he made it very clear at the very beginning of April that he was going to use this virus as an agenda machine, and he was going to change the way he governed. He absolutely said in an interview that he would use a progressive agenda to change how we do business, change government. And you can't tell me that he's going to go back on that now and say that, oh, no, it's a medical reason, because it's not. We know it's not medical anymore.
I don't know what the science would be on that 14-day. The federal criteria, the CDC's criteria, you're essentially meeting all of those. And your board of supervisors has asked for consideration on the ones that are impossible. Has there been any response from the governor's office?
Not yet. Not that I'm aware of. I have a very good relationship with the supervisors. We speak all the time. The governor has not reached out to them at all for their opinion. He's never been to Riverside County. He doesn't know what it's like here, what we're going through here, what we're fighting, he's not been in contact with our medical system to see what we're doing. So he's sitting in a room somewhere, making these decisions that affect the entire state, including Riverside County, knowing nothing about Riverside County. Right, so it makes it very, very difficult.
You're listening to an audio of a LA special report, Fox 11, with Dr. Drew Pinsky, Sheriff Chad Bianco of Riverside County, and the host and facilitator, a man named Alex Michelson. We're going to listen to a little more, and then on the other side, we're going to get an update. This was originally a little more than a week ago, Friday, May the 15th. And many of you know yesterday, the governor has shared in his view how churches can begin to reopen. And we'll kind of get deeper into that one. But a little more of the interview with Sheriff Chad Bianco, Dr. Drew Pinsky, and Alex Michelson. It is very interesting.
So I contacted the governor's office for their response. We offered them to come on with you tonight. They referred me to the Health and Human Services Agency. They sent me this information, a statement, saying that Riverside County, they gave us some information. I'm going to put it up on the screen, showing the number of cases in Riverside County. More than 5,000 cases, 249 deaths, 184 patients still hospitalized, and there's an increasing number of infections, according to them.
Said, it's at a slower rate. Increasing, but it's at a very slow rate.
They also said this. There is a process for counties to move more quickly to reopen in stage two, which is submitting an attestation to the state certifying that the county has successfully limited COVID-19, has enough hospital capacity and enough testing, among other criteria. At present, Alcohol Beverage Control has contacted 10 premises in Riverside County since March 19th for violating the governor's stay-at-home order. And the Board of Barbering and Cosmetology has initiated at least 53 investigations into establishments that would violate the order. They said that 20 counties have filed official paperwork with the state to move forward towards reopening restaurants, but Riverside County hasn't. Why haven't you? And what's your response to what the governor's team or the Health and Human Services team is saying?
That is the most unbelievably childish thing I've ever read in my life. So basically what he's saying, it has absolutely nothing to do with medical. It has nothing to do with saving our hospitals, the influx of our hospitals, or flattening the curve. We're going to be punished because the ABC had to come out and investigate businesses. What does any of that have to do with the amount of cases we have in our hospital situation? Those numbers sound great when you throw them on a piece of paper and you just throw them in front of it on your screen. But we have 2.5 million people in this county. That's 0.000007%. That is not a large number. That is a very minuscule number. And that is proof that this has absolutely nothing to do with medical anymore.
And I'm looking at the application. They filed it publicly on what the Board of Supervisors was asking from the state. Maybe they didn't do the actual criteria because they know they're going to be rejected because of these particular elements they're asking to be considered otherwise.
So if there is another outbreak because of what's happening right now, will you feel responsible in some way?
You know, when you say if there is another outbreak, I mean, if the outbreak continues, I mean, what are we going to consider another outbreak? As long as we keep testing, we're always going to get positive tests. We know it's a virus. It's nothing different than a flu virus if you're trying to get numbers. So we know that those numbers are going to increase with testing. We know that there will be more people test positive. That's the only way we can not do that is quit testing. So the numbers don't make sense. The math doesn't make sense. Reality of what we're dealing with in the county is not being put into play. There's no common sense being used. To me, it just makes it 100% political. The part about me not going out and making criminals of people, you know, any law enforcement officer, we have the ability to have the discretion at any type of arrest. And this is one of those where, you know, when it doesn't make sense, you don't make an arrest. And this certainly doesn't make sense anymore.
And just lastly, so are you concerned that the governor may come in and sort of supersede you in some way, that they may start trying to shut down these businesses? Have you heard of that? Have they warned about that in any way?
You know, I hope that's not going to be the case. And really, all I have to say to that is, what's he going to do? I hope, you know, he's a politician. And I hope he doesn't do that, because that certainly would just show that, oh, somebody wronged him, so, you know, he's going to take it out on them. I don't know. I hope he would. I hope it wouldn't resort to that, but I guess you never know.
I just say thank you, Pastor Chad Bianco, Sheriff Chad Bianco, and Dr. Drew Pinsky for their level-headedness and their ability to just articulate a line that we don't hear often in the mainstream media. So when we come back, yesterday, Governor Gavin Newsom issued new guidelines for churches in California and how they can begin to have in-person services. What did he say? And what's the response from now 1,500 pastors and clergy here in California to the latest of what the governor shared? You won't want to miss this one. That's next and much more. Your calls are welcome. 888-528-2557. This is the Frank Sontag Show. Welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show. Thank you for joining us. Before we share a little bit about what Governor Newsom said yesterday about churches reopening, there's a story I'm sure many of you heard out of Chicago. Very distressing, very concerning. Chicago officials are now threatening not only to close a church, they're even threatening to bulldoze it if it continues to meet in defiance of what they call a state order. Now, the story you can find at ChristianHeadlines.com. It involves the commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health, Allison Arwadi, and a church in Chicago, Elim Romanian Pentecostal Church, who has remained open, and now Chicago officials are not only threatening the church, but they're saying they've got the right to actually knock the church down. In fact, Arwadi, the commissioner, said, quote, "If you continue to host gatherings in violation of the executive order, the city of Chicago will take all necessary measures to abate the nuisance or to ensure the safety of the Chicago's and the city's residents." In the Supreme Court, there's a terminology called summary abatement, which means to put down or destroy without process. We will follow that story closely. We think we've got it bad here in California. The governor yesterday issued new guidelines for churches saying they can begin reopening if they limit attendance to 25% or a maximum of 100 attendees, whichever is lower. Well, if you haven't heard by now, there's an ever-growing list of pastors and clergy that have signed on to the idea of opening church this Sunday, Pentecost Sunday. Here's a press release as issued by the law office that is representing 1,500 members of the clergy in California. They've signed on to a declaration of essentiality. We know last Friday, at least you should, President Trump said all churches are essential. And he challenged all the governors all across the state to honor the decree that the president said. Well, so you got the governor yesterday saying, well, we're gonna open up and we'll allow you, but 25% or no more than 100 attendees. Yeah, okay. Here's the official response from the legal representation of 1,500 members. Quote, "Today, obviously yesterday, the governor of California issued new COVID-19 guidance as it applies to those and places of worship. While we appreciate the efforts made to allow places of worship to resume services," here's my favorite part, "the guidance limiting occupancy to 25% or 100 people, whichever is less, is not acceptable because it still discriminates against places of worship. Restaurants, for example, have no stated occupancy limitations, but simply require that guests at tables be separated by 6 feet. Additionally, large stores continue operating without being limited in their occupancy from their normal levels. While many churches will have no problem complying with the 100-person limit, some of our clients have churches that seat 2,500 people and more. Limiting places of worship to 100 people is arbitrary, unreasonable, and unconstitutional. Our clients will continue to make plans to hold services on May 31st. Many will not limit themselves to 100 persons. We encourage the governor to reconsider this unnecessary low limitation on occupancy. Meanwhile, we will continue to pursue our legal claims in court in order to prevent future authorities from stripping First Amendment liberties from places of worship. Signed, attorney Robert Tyler and the pastors named in the letter to the governor. Available for additional comments and interviews. Tyler and Birch is the law outfit, and I'm going to reach out to Robert as soon as they get off the air. He's a friend. We'll see if we can get him on the program tomorrow as time is available, because this is an ever-unfolding story that is the lead-up to this Sunday. And I think in the next 72 hours or so, a lot can happen. But I remember the specific wording of the original decree from the legal representation of, I think it was 1,200 pastors, now it's 1,500. And the word was in defiance of Governor Gavin Newsom's order. So a showdown is coming. We're going to keep on top of it, and I'll reach out to Robert Taylor to see if he is, Tyler to see if he's available in the next 48 hours or so to maybe share a bit more light on this ever unfolding story. If you have information you want to send me, I would just say this. I've gotten a lot of people that send me emails. You've got to see this, and it's a link of a video. You have to give me information. I'm not clicking on links I don't know in this day and age of viruses in computers, etc. I don't know most of you. So if you want to share information with me, please do so responsibly. Give me a story, a backstory, information. And if you have anything else, maybe guest suggestions, please know you are always welcomed to email me at franksontag@kkla.com. I've gotten some very powerful emails recently. I thank you for caring. The Sheriff Bianco story, I would not have been able to present it to you if listener Steven didn't send it to me. I didn't know about it. So anything you want to send my way, information for the program, something about your church, ways that we can serve you, maybe you just need prayer, email me at franksontag@kkla.com. Pastor Greg Laurie will be on the program Thursday at 3, talking about all they're doing at Harvest for the gospel. And we hope and pray that you will be back tomorrow at 3 for a more of this, the Frank Sontag Show.